The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
It's Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris with my co-host Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and this week, Pastor David Weasley from the First Congregational Church of Bellingham. Welcome, Pastor Weasley.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So are we. We have a lot to talk about, including you're going to tell us about the ground floor and getting in on the ground floor. We have that to look forward to. So many people just popped up like the little whack-a-mole game announcing their candidacies for elections in the county and the state. So we have some stuff to chew over with that. But first, we are so proud of our powerful and organized students in Bellingham, Washington. Once again, our students, thousands of them, led the way. They were part of the March for Our Lives event that happened on the 24th. Washington, D.C., and over 800 marches across the country. And once again, our Bellingham students made national news with thousands, over 3,000 is the number that I heard, marching to bring awareness to gun violence, safety, and legislation in our schools. And our citizen journalist, Brooks Collins, was on the scene, and he had this report.
On March 24th, hundreds of Bellingham students gathered at City Hall, joining the over 200,000 participants of the March for Our Lives, a student-led protest calling for school safety and stricter gun legislation. They began with a history lesson.
2006, Shepherd University. There were 11 other school shootings that year.
Virginia Tech,
Las Vegas,
2007.
Nevada, 58
there
people
There were
killed.
Five other school shootings
Pulse
that
Club.
Year.
MIT,
Orlando,
2013, there were 26 other
killed.
School shootings that
Sandy
year.
Sandy Hook.
Major East Stillman
Newtown,
Douglas High School shooting, 2018. There have been 13 school shootings this year so far.
The top five deadliest shootings in U.S. history have killed almost 200 people between them. Of these five shootings, four were committed using a semi-automatic assault rifle.
10 people spoke before the march on the steps of City Hall, 9 students and 1 teacher, including representatives of Black Lives Matter and of Students for Action.
My name is Noah Lovell. I'm a junior at Squalicum High School, and I am a proud member of Students for Action. Wow, what a crowd. Give yourself a round of applause. I want to ask you 3 important questions, and I want you to respond with, yes, we can. Can we stop gun violence in schools?
Yes, we can!
Can we unite the country?
Yes, we can!
Can we bring change and action?
Yes, we can!
Thank you. God bless America.
My name is Izzy Jones. I'm 15 years old, and I was 10 years old when 20 children and 8 adults were shot and killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. Since then, there have been 209 more instances with gun violence in schools. Being a high school student is rewarding and exhilarating, and also filled with so much fear. Fear of failing a class, fear of ruining our reputations, and scariest of all, the fear that something will happen to us in the space we are supposed to feel safe. I am done reading the thoughts and prayers, not just from our government, but from many of our citizens with an "it is what it is" attitude. We are past the time for change, and it is time to finally start. So get involved. Attend the school board meetings. Call your local and federal government and tell them that you want laws in place to control guns. Donate and volunteer your time and money to organizations dedicated to ending gun violence. Use your voice because it is a power that you have been given and you cannot just let it go. Use it for good. Use it to save student lives. Enough is enough. Thank you.
I refuse to be a victim. We refuse to be a victim. We are sad, we are hurt, but we are strong and we are one together. This last school shooting will be the last school shooting. This is what we expect. This is what we demand. Thank you for coming.
Get against the inside wall. Turn off your cell phone. Do not contact your family. Help me close all the blinds and shades. After every school shooting, we discuss with students safety plans, telling them where to position and where to remain silent. The causes of school violence are complex, and to say anything else is naive. Yet this is madness. Our collective futures sit inside each and every classroom in America every day. From kindergarten to university, our students deserve better. I am done being silent.
I am so proud to be among fellow students and classmates, teachers, parents, community members. Look at the crowd we've drawn out, even in this Bellingham rain. You would think that amidst all the violence and tragedy, we would be left with a greater sense of urgency and frustration. However, we've only become more and more numb. The words gunmen and victims are becoming white noise in the news, and the faces of grieving family members are beginning to blend together. We have gone to school all our lives learning to cover the windows on doors with construction paper, been instructed on how to quickly hide under tables, and constantly informed about which side of the room to sit on in the event of a shooting. All these years, we've been putting a Band-Aid on a broken bone. Have we forgotten what schools are about? Truthfully, we are a generation shaped by gun violence. However, we are also a generation that realizes we are not bound by the constraints of previous inaction. We don't need to agree on what exactly causes a mass shooting. We don't need to settle on either a Democratic or a Republican solution. We just need to agree that we never want it to happen again. There's no good reason why civilians need killing machines meant for war zones. We have become so bound by the labeling of our political parties that we have failed to open our minds to our reality. We're not demanding that we ban all guns, not at all. We solely ask that you recognize that doing nothing is no longer an answer. Our current 18th century legislation is not capable of controlling our 21st century weapons. We're talking about machines with the capability of taking dozens of lives in a matter of seconds. Driving a car is more regulated in our country than owning a gun. Imagine what we could have avoided with simple regulation. Mandatory gun training, written tests, background checks, mental health requirements, renewals, and inspections. Did you know that assault rifles were illegal in the U.S. from 1994 to 2004? Mass shootings dropped by 37%. We lifted the ban, and shootings have since spiked by 183%. Don't tell me gun control doesn't work. Look at Canada, Japan, England, Australia, Germany. The U.S. has 16 times the gun homicide rate than that of Germany. There is direct correlation between countries passing some form of stricter gun legislation and a drop in gun-related deaths. Although we may not yet be of age to vote, we have the ability to continue the power of the movement, to continue to provoke change, and to continue to prove that words are not enough. Most importantly, let us come together as a generation. When we open up our hearts and look past our differences, we will find the power of the similarities that unite us. Our country is beyond divided on this issue, and hate will only continue to spread. As the future leaders of the 21st century, may we listen to one another despite our differing perspectives. May we respect the differences and diversity that makes us unique as a country. May we learn from the mistakes of previous generations to ensure that rather than waste time on bickering and holding on to ancient partisan disputes, we focus on the issues at hand that impact us as a whole. Not as Democrats, not as Republicans, but as Americans. Thank you.
And with that rousing send-off, the march began. It ended back at City Hall with a familiar song. This is Brooks Collins, In Awe of Our Children, for Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM.
Cascadia News Now, and we want to thank our citizen journalist, Brooks Collins, for that excellent report, and we hope to be able to air more of that march on KMRE coming soon. My co-hosts tonight, Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and Pastor David Weasley from the First Congregational Church of Bellingham. There's a lot to be impressed about with the second march that's happened in just a few weeks.
It's an amazing thing. I can think of few times in my lifetime when I've been so impressed by the way that outrage and strategy is erupting, especially among our young people. It was really impressive when Occupy Wall Street broke out a few years back. But this is a different kind of thing. It's coming up from a different generation, and that's really exciting.
Yeah, and it is a remarkable generation. I was reading some deep drilling on this particular generation from Pew Research and others. The amount of drug abuse and alcohol use is way, way down in this generation. They are far less prone to like aggression, violence among each other. They're more able to resolve their problems. They just basically they have their act together in a way that I think puts their parents and grandparents to shame. And then for them to step up with clear minds and say we're not going to accept this propaganda that has been deposited upon us by the system, and we're just going to call for some reasonable and rational actions that save our lives. I think it's a terrific. I'm very proud of these kids.
Well, as Brooks Collins said, he was in awe of them, and I think most of us in our generations are. It's interesting that you say that. I didn't know about those statistics. Maybe the indigo child theory is not so far from the truth, but it's interesting to me, particularly because of the hopelessness that is in our environment right now. I mean, I've been through Reagan and two Bushes, and I felt hopeless in my past, yeah. But it's a confluence of at the very least, scandal-ridden national federal government, and an increase of technology, and which causes a decrease of jobs, a decrease of opportunities, and topics like peak water and peak food and peak oil and the destruction of the polar bears. Like I can't even list this without feeling hopeless. So what do you think it is, Tim?
I think it's several things. But one thing, there's one statistic, and I want people to be wary about it because it's being trotted around. Just understand this. Not only is the amount of hand-to-hand physical violence and bullying down, that the actual number of physical shootings among school-age children is actually down. What's not down is the mass shootings. Those are up. And so what you have to ask, well, what's the difference between now and, let's 20 years ago? Well, 20 years ago, there was an assault weapon ban. So that even if you were messed up and on drugs and, drinking heavily and all the rest of the things that my generation and my parents' generation did when they were in school, even if that stuff is down, the access to these weapons these weapons are more accessible than they have been.
And there's more of them.
Right. There's several possible causes to this, and one of them is that they're more connected socially through social media. One of the statistics that was cited in the study I read was that fathers are tending to be more involved in the raising of children, which is a very encouraging kind of statistic. I mean, let's talk hopeful here. The other thing that I thought was interesting is this is the first generation of kids in the United States in 100 years that really have not been exposed to lead in heavy quantities. Mm-hmm. And we know what the effect of lead is on intellect, and we know that it also creates people that are exposed to lead are more violent. And so this is a lead-free generation, and it's encouraging to see.
When one more thing, one corollary to that is the Flynn effect, which is was observed by the researcher whose first name I cannot recall now, that the average IQ has increased over time. Over the course of the 20th century, the average IQ, and the scale is such that 100 is supposed to be average, but a 100 in the 1990s, is considerably higher than what the 100 would have been in the 1890s. And part of the explanation for that is the increase in complexity. Like any muscle, as you work your brain, you get better at it. And, you know, these kids are living in the most complex time that we've ever experienced.
I'm ready
Pastor
for them to
Weasley,
take over the world.
I just want to right. I think we all are. But Pastor Weasley, I want to check in with you because you have a congregation which includes people of all ages, and I'm curious to know about your personal experience.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for asking. And a big part of my work at the congregation is working with our middle school and high school youth. Many of them have been involved in both the Walkout March and this March for Our Lives. They continue to really inspire me and surprise me and educate me on all kinds of things, not the least of which is gun control and gun violence. One of the things that I really love about congregational work by its nature, it's intergenerational. So I know 15-year-olds who are mad in a whole new way because of what's happened in the last couple of months. And I know 50-year-olds and 70-year-olds who had kind of given up on hope that there would be any meaningful change in gun control and gun violence legislation in our country, who, you know, they were feeling like that fire had died in them, but actually it had just been walled up. And seeing these young people get up and march has kind of torn down some of those walls and reignited that fire in some really important ways. So I really think that it's appropriate to look to these youth to lead us, but not to save us. I think that's all of our work, and that's really exciting about these days.
Well, do you think that it is a sense that I've gotten? I'm so glad that you bring that up, David, that some of us of older generations are putting a lot on these kids to rescue everyone. And I've gotten that sense that, we couldn't do it. Oh, my God, but they can do it. And they're so strong. And I've been guilty of saying, sure, they're so strong. Is that a problem? Is that a danger?
I think whenever we're looking for someone else to solve our problems for us, that's a little bit of a danger. This is a democracy, and it takes a lot of us to move things. And, you know, every time I'm like, well, somebody else is going to fix that for me, either I'm wrong or I'm ceding some of my power, and it doesn't go – we're not using our community resources as much as we can.
So I think it's a difficult balance in a way because – just as we've had the student organizers of the previous march on our show before, I had to watch being a longtime activist myself. I don't want to give advice either. And so how is a way that I am helping and uplifting other people and not stepping on their voices without saying, oh, you'll take care of everything?
Absolutely. And there's absolutely role differences. We can all be involved, and we might be involved in different ways. So like there are folk in my congregation who are like, boy, I wish I could turn out for that march, but I'm hospitalized or I'm in a retirement community and I just can't walk that much. So I'm going to write a check. I'm going to keep them in my prayers. And prayers by themselves are bad, and prayers in support of other things I think are good. And that's a whole other radio show probably. So finding our piece of the work, you know, if we're going to lift something heavy, we all got to find a corner to lift on. And the youth can inspire us. The youth has some great ideas. We can give them strategy advice when they ask for it. We can give them places to rest when they ask for that. We can throw money at them when they ask for that. Trusting their wisdom and adding our insight when they ask, which is hard to do.
Well, I'm going to just toss this out.
Please.
One of the trite statements that is made in the wake of any of these shootings is thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers. And it's been said so much that it's just become a trite way, and it almost sounds like it's a way of deflecting or delaying doing something. But I want to put this out there for listeners. Maybe this is the answer to our thoughts and prayers. Are these kids getting up, saying really what nonsense these memes that we have in our society that prevent us from moving forward, shining a spotlight on that and encouraging everybody to move forward.
Reminds me of the joke my rabbi tells about, well, I sent you two boats in a helicopter.
Right.
I'm not going to go into the whole joke. I'll put it on the website. I think that you're right. I will say in defense of millions of people who see tragedy after tragedy after tragedy, whether it's here, whether it's Puerto Rico, whether it's Syria, that sometimes we have to say something because there isn't enough. And we can write checks, and those are important, and the actions are important. But just on the other side, I think when people are like, well, you're sending a lot of thoughts in person, not doing anything, yes, you're right. On the other hand, I have a lot of compassion for people who are just overwhelmed by the sadness of the world.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I was looking at my phone and I got a headline alert that came through, and it was another shooting, and it was, you know, shooting in Mary. And I thought, oh, no. And I looked at it and I felt happy that it wasn't Marysville. And then I felt ashamed about that for the entire rest of the day. And it's really nice to see people who are interested and engaged and hopeful, because I feel like the way our politics has worked in the past, in the process of it, in an electoral sense, is you take the youngest, most hopeful, energetic people, and you burn through them so that by the time they're 25, they don't care. They don't have any hope. They don't, you know, they've knocked on all these doors. They've called all these people at home, and they're done.
Yeah, and this gets back to something I think we talked about on the show last week, which was, you know, the initiatives in Washington State to remove the barriers to voting, to get people registered to vote earlier, to get them more involved. This is the moment where their passion is high, their ability to affect the system is great, and I really applaud the governor and the legislature for recognizing that and empowering it.
And those of us who have been in these movements for longer know that cycle of, we worked on something really hard, it didn't work, we got heartbroken, we lost forward, or we figured out our next play, or we stayed in it. And I think that probably this youth movement that we're seeing now with March for Our Lives, at least so far, there has not been a wave of gun control legislation in response to this. And so resourcing them in a way that's going to help them to stay in this work over the long haul is something that certainly I hope to bring, and I know a lot of my colleagues who are older than 15 hope to bring to support these young people.
Well, and that's one of the things that is powerful about the fact that students are taking the lead, is that it's hard to pin some sort of political aspirations or strategy on kids who are saying, I don't want to die, I don't want to go to school and be worried about being shot. One of the speakers said, you know, there's so many things we already have to fear in high school.
And that is true.
And we shouldn't have to fear getting shot. So the fact that these are kids, yes, there are some elected officials who are casting aspersions on kids and saying, well, you're just young and you're just emotional, but really, you can't argue. You can't assign blame or guilt to students who are standing up and saying, look, change this.
Stephanie, are you trying to suggest that all of these kids are not paid crisis actors?
Well, and that might lead to the fact that there are some somewhere. But
yeah, do you know where I can get in on that?
Yeah, I want the paycheck too. I want the paycheck.
But there's my crisis actor paycheck?
Yikes. But I think there's some labor laws.
Tweet that out, everyone. Hashtag, where's my crisis actor paycheck?
Right. I think there are some labor laws.
Clearly,
that
I
might
don't understand
come into
Twitter. I don't know how that fits.
Right. But there are a couple of other things that I want to point out. Yes, you're absolutely right, David, that we have some of us have been frustrated by seeing progress slip back, and you know the long arc of history, it goes up and down. It's not a straight progressive line. But I know, who knew? But there's a couple of things that I want to point out, and one of the things that's the most striking to me was, in this rally and then in the walkout that we had, there are deliberate, clear, concise
calls to action. And that's something that I think a lot of movements forget or don't have, or just are expressions of frustration and anger, and you should do what's right. And the fact that these students are saying, do this, call your representatives, it gives those people who are only thoughts and prayers-ing something to do. That's one thing. And the other thing is, look, we just had two in about a month and a half. And one of the things that frustrated me about the Women's March was that it was powerful. It was across the nation and other parts of the world. And then everybody went home. Mm-hmm. And they're like, woohoo, we stood up to evil.
Right. Well, Pastor, I don't want to put you on the spot on this question because I think we're going to get into some of these issues later in the hour. But you in your in your role,
yeah.
Have a lot of contact with youth. And apart from this specific instance, do you notice some things about the kids today that you deal with that are notable?
That's a great question. I think so. Some of the things about kids today are actually just things about youth in general. So neurologically, adolescents are the shorthand I often use is better and smarter than us. But to unpack that a little, they're faster at learning things. They're better at making social connections. They're going to have more creativity, and they're going to come up with those ideas faster than any other person can, or any other demographic can. And so I think it's on us as adults who care about young people, who want to resource young people, to make some safe space and to protect that capacity. So to be on teams with them, to like, you got to have a young person on your team, or you're just leaving a lot of potential outside. The kind of flip side of that, or the shadow side of that neurological capacity, is that there are a lot they don't have the resources for estimating risk neurologically. And so our adults selves can come in and say, like, okay, right, so like maybe don't drive quite that fast on your way to the protest. Or thinking through the long-term strategy and kind of bringing our adult brains with these youth brains and coming up with some really good strategy. That was not exactly what you were asking, but I think that's a continuing thing for me whenever I work with youth, and I think that'll be true when I'm 65 and working with youth. The things I'm seeing right now, I don't know that I've been in youth work long enough to really comment. I know the differences between me at 15 and some of these young people at 15, but like, spoiler alert, I was a really weird 15-year-old, so I don't know.
I was about to ask you to name one.
I don't know how representative that is. Certainly they're very like technologically sophisticated and thoughtful about the ways they're connectional and very hyper-connected. And a lot of times in my role, I hear adults who are concerned about social media and kind of fretting about that. And there is a lot of potential for harm from those social networks and that really hyper-connected culture that's arising in the youth, I don't know, culture. And there's a lot of potential for resourcing and support. And so I certainly don't want to like say that that's a bad thing. I want to say there's problematic things about it, but that's a huge resource as well. Like to organize a march the size of the walkout a few weeks ago in the amount of time, like couldn't have happened when I was a student because we weren't hyper-connected on Instagram and Snapchat and all these other networks.
And I think there's a safety too in that pre-social media, I especially as a high school student would have felt completely embarrassed if I said, hey, what if we did this? And everybody just stared at me.
Sure.
Whereas Maggie Davis Bauer, who started the walkout, put it on Facebook and said, you know, I'm really frustrated. I want to do something. And hundreds of students responded within 48 hours.
That's right. You have access to those folks who are in solidarity with you that you wouldn't know are in solidarity with
but
you.
A layer of protection too.
Sure.
Although, and this is another show, I think that the arc of social media swings both ways.
Absolutely.
And you know, there's bullying and horrible things about it too. It's not just a blessing. You are listening to Cascadia News Now, and our special guest host tonight is Pastor David Weasley from the First Congregational Church of Bellingham. We're going to get into some work that he's doing specifically with homeless youth in a moment, but we also have a lot of election news to talk about. I do want to remind you that you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham. 102.5 KAVZ Deming Van Zandt, and on the web at kmre.org and KPNW-DB. So thank you to whoever you are for listening. And if you have feedback, if you want to be a citizen journalist, first of all, you should always have your phone on record if you need to, so that you are a witness to what's happening around you. But give us a call or shout at CascadiaNewsNow.com or on Facebook if you'd like to become a citizen journalist. So one of the things that the students have said nationally and locally over and over and over and over again is reach out and contact your legislators and actually get involved in elections. See how I did that? So people who are getting involved in elections, there are young people jumping up all over the nation, but a little closer to home. We had some big news this week. Let's start with Doug Erickson, Senator of the 42nd, who has caused a lot of anguish and ire and issues in the past couple of years. Just as a very, very quick recap, there have been issues with him and lobbying money and lunches and who bought those lunches for what, and the fact that he was appointed to the Environmental Protection Agency while he was being a senator, and who knows how, but he was collecting two paychecks at once. And I also want to point out, as regards protests, that this session, Senator Erickson proposed a bill that would have made some protests illegal. He called those disruptive protests, quote, economic terrorism. And they would have allowed a felony prosecution of people involved in protests that block transportation. That failed. It's exciting that we have not one, but as Tim has sort of leaked this week, two challengers. We knew about Pinky Vargas. She's our city councilwoman. She has been on our show. It was episode 206, if you want to hear her talking about her race. And then today, Tim, I'll let you break it.
Well, this has not been officially announced, but it has been confirmed to me that the former chairman of Lummi Nation, Tim Ballou, who is currently serving on Whatcom County Council, is scheduled sometime later this week to announce that he is also running for this position. And I think that this sort of circles back to some of the things that we were talking about and were heard in our audio segment, which was that there's a lot of frustration with the two parties and the way the two parties operate. And there's a lot of energy into running multiple candidates on the Democratic side, some of whom are going to run to the left of the other person in order to, liberal up the Democratic Party, which is seen as a tool, I think, maybe the lesser of two evils. Let's make the Democratic Party not the lesser of two evils. Let's make the Democratic Party the good instead of the lesser of two evils. And there's a lot of energy like of that kind that is being applied. Now, when I say that, I'm not making any commentary about Doug's race, because I think what you have are two extremely talented political people, Pinky Vargas, who is on Bellingham City Council, and Tim Ballou, who's currently serving on Whatcom County Council. And they, I think, both have a legitimate desire to go down to Olympia and try to affect change. For Pinky, I think her interest is in making sure that social justice aims are pursued. For Tim, I think it's to go down there and try to deal with these resource issues, including water resource issues, and be a voice down in Olympia on those important matters.
Yeah, and I'm, as I say all the time, thrilled that we have multiple candidates in that race. I think we're about 25% of the amount we should get ultimately running there, because that's going to be better for the eventual winner and all of the other participants and all of us. And this is really important, and it's been very difficult in years past to get candidates to run in this district. But there's not anything you do in your daily life that isn't somehow touched by the Washington State Legislature.
Well, let's unpack that just a little bit. You said It's difficult to get people to run in this district. This is the 42nd district, and Bellingham has been sort of split up in the after the last census, and things got redistricted. And the South, the 40th, and Sudden Valley and South Bellingham got bluer, and Bellingham itself got divided up. So what the 42nd consists of is most of Whatcom County, all of the conservative areas in the county, and a little bit of North Bellingham. And
I live in that district. That's my district.
Don't many of us. But there's been a perception. There have been good candidates, including Seth Fleetwood, who has lost. Al Jensen. People have lost in that district who had a lot of experience and talent and skills. But there's been a perception that it is an unwinnable district. So now I will put it to you guys. Do you feel like that is changing with the demographics?
Well, I would push back on it a little bit. I think that the district that has been really polarized and unwinnable has been the 40th district. That's a district in which conservative candidates really have just, and Republicans have had a really, really tough time. Now, up until recent years, the 42nd district was a very dynamic district.
Pre-redistricting.
Yeah, we had Georgia Gardner as a senator. She was a Democrat. We had Kelly Linville.
She was a Democrat.
Dale Branlin was a Republican, but he was very
moderate.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the 42nd is has been, until recent years, a very competitive district, a very swing district. And I still think that there's a potential in there. I would probably put it at about 5%. It's interesting. There are thousands of people who are registered to vote in the 42nd district that have never voted.
Sure.
So what happens if you activate them? And what does it take to activate them? On the other hand, I think that there's a 5% of Republicans who have looked at Doug's, his moving around, wanting a different job, his kind of double dipping on paychecks, his he was in Washington, D.C. while the session was in. And for a lot of people, that rubs them the wrong way. Mm. That's like you're not committed to who you are. And I don't know what percentage that is, but if it was 5%, let's say 5% of those people could be peeled off. Then you might have a race. You might have a race in the 42nd
Well,
district.
You talked about it being a previously moderate district. And
not moderate, but a swingy district.
A swingy, but there were moderates leading us. There were elected moderates, and then you said until recent years, which harkens back to the redistricting.
Correct.
So let's turn to our numbers guy.
Yeah, what's that been like in recent elections?
It has not been great if you're not a Republican, and a specific brand
Doug
of Republican.
Erickson,
yeah, and you know, this is the district that elected Jason Overstreet, who was an extremist, and because of the being in a corner of Washington State, you kind of run out of room. If you want the 40th to be safe blue forever and ever, the 42nd is going to be less competitive. But
42nd is collateral damage
yeah.
from having a short up.
Yeah. It's just the bit that's left off at the end. And but this year with the specific case of Doug Erickson, people paying a heck of a lot more attention to the state legislature in this past session than we've seen, thanks in part to the really bad Public Disclosure Act decision the legislators made, and all of them in the 40th and the 42nd, except for Kevin Ranker, voted in favor of that mess, and the national environment, it's looking a lot more competitive. And the 42nd is a district where national seats are carried by Democrats. You know, they do well there, and it's the local folks that do less well. So I think that it's not going to take a dramatic change to have a lasting difference in the 42nd.
I agree with that. But I would elaborate a little bit on a point, which is that when you redistrict, when anybody redistricts, they tend to redistrict in cities because you're making changes in a district house by house and block by block instead of mile by mile as you do in rural areas. And so what's happened over the years is Bellingham has more and more frequently had pieces of itself peeled off and sent down into the 40th district as the 42nd district's population has gone up. And so that's the phenomenon. And I don't know that there's an easy solution to it because it's a very logical thing to do. It actually is less disruptive to redistrict inside urban boundaries than it is inside rural boundaries.
Right. Well, let's get back to the candidates.
Sure.
Because we can talk about that all day long. But Tim Ballew and Pinky Vargas, Tim, as you said, that they're both good challengers. You noted that Tim Ballew is the chair of the Lummi Nation and the Lummi Indian Business Council. And also a lifelong fisherman and has a Western Washington University degree in psych.
And hasn't actually announced yet. And so you're
right.
Hearing it on the air tonight first, folks.
Woo! And if it wasn't for the Cascadia Weekly, it would be really breaking. But thank you for – go read the gristle, I have to say. So – but Tim's a great candidate. Pinky also is outreach manager for Puget Sound Energy. So I think that they both bring an environmental in different ways, an environmental component, which is important because not only is this weird – Senator Erickson, EPA, national stuff, but he was the head of, back when the Republicans were in power in Olympia, he was the head of the Environment
Committee
and had some really awful head-to-heads with Kevin Renker and did some things that were pretty questionable. So that's going to be an interesting dialogue anyway, but let's look at a couple of other already contested races. As we said a week or two ago, in the 40th, which is a little bit of South Whatcom and Skagit and San Juan County, where Kevin Renker and Jeff Morris are, Chris Litton has announced that she's stepping down, and already within a couple of weeks, we have two challengers, Alex Remmel and Rudd Brown, again, political heavy hitters, I have to say. Rudd Brown is the current chair of the Whatcom County Council, and he's an enviro businessman, as he describes himself. And he's been on the council for a few years now. Alex Remmel has been with Sustainable Connections, Stand.Earth. He was the activist in the Extreme Oil campaign and has been on our show as well. So again, we have two environmentally focused people.
Now, this race is interesting to me because I truly believe in this area. Number one, I'm not sure that these are the only candidates we're going to get on the Democratic side. This is just Bellingham, and it's a much bigger district than Bellingham. But what's
exciting—
And the filing
deadline is in a couple of weeks.
That's right, in May. Yeah.
17th, I think.
Yeah, and beyond that, this is a district where I think somebody could really try to run to the left of somebody and win. And it's been my complaint about this district all along that you've got kind of a centrist sort of guy like Rick Larson in the race, and there really needs to be somebody that's like a lot more
progressive. To be fair, he's a congressman, and District 2 does include Oak Harbor.
I got you. But this is a district that would support a very liberal candidate. And so the dynamics are a lot different. I think in the 42nd, you sort of have to put yourself out as a centrist and like, I'm not going to do anything crazy, folks. And in the 40th, you could say, I'm going to do some really crazy stuff and you're going to love it. And that's what Kevin Renker has kind of done in his career there. And I think that the possibilities there. So I think this could be a very, very exciting primary in August.
Pastor, have you met Senator Renker yet?
I have not yet.
Oh my gosh, we got to get you two together. He's awesome not to have a little Renker Lift Fest. But he led the way on equal marriage in Washington State before it was national and domestic partnership. He has two dads. Mm-hmm. And so his legislation, his testimony on the floor was powerfully moving. Amen. He's done so much, as you know, for orcas and BPA and baby bottles and the Salish Sea and the Reproductive Parity Act. Like, he really is the progressive that progressives want.
He is a very exuberant personality. Yeah. And I think that the 40th district rewards exuberance. And that's why it's kind of exciting to me. Rudd coming in, he's a businessman. He's pragmatic. He's practical. He's got experience in these issues. And then I think Alex comes in. And what I want to say is, and I hope I can say this without getting into trouble, but He comes in there very focused on particular things, clean energy policy. He's worked very hard on issues of rail transport, coal, those sorts of issues. And he's going to come in the way that Chris Litton came in with really a
education
a fire for education. Mm-hmm. Alex is going to come in with a fire for clean energy.
Well, both of those guys are pretty bold, larger-than-life guys. And in a way, that's interesting because Representative Litton is kind of a reserved person.
Yes.
And so that's great. It would bum me out to see it be an all-white male 40th district again. On the other hand, we have to balance that with no Bellingham representation at mm-hmm. all. So yes, you're right, other people may step up, but I really would like to see somebody in the 40th be from Bellingham for a change.
Or somebody in the legislature, period. I mean, that's the issue,
right.
Period.
I mean, and that would happen if Pinky
yes.
were to win also.
Correct.
So to be fair. So let's get to one more race, and then we have to move on. We mentioned before Dave McEachran, who has been our county prosecutor since Methuselah, also known as 1975. He himself is an excellent argument for term limits just by existing. And he has two challengers, James Erb, who is a Whatcom and Bellingham and has been a Nooksack Nation prosecutor, Eric Ritchie, who is a county chief criminal deputy prosecuting attorney. Ritchie has a poli-sci degree from Western. What's interesting about this race is that These people are relatively unknown, unlike Alex Rammel and Red Brown, outside of the legal circuit, outside of the law people. These people are relatively unknown. James Erb has a website. Eric Ritchie does not have a website, but it's early yet. I do want to say it's great when you have a website together. Having looked at James Erb's website, I want to say that while things that move around and change and have motion are really good on a website, when you have a website that says commitment to, and it says one thing and then it erases, and then it says another thing and then erases, and this is another thing, it kind of makes me wonder, do you know what your commitment is to? I'm just saying, there's a little backfire right there.
Too much flash.
Web design.
Too much flash, too little substance. You know, this is an interesting, I would say this. It is not at all clear that Dave McEachran is going to run for re-election at this point. In fact, the fact that Ritchie came in suggests to me that Dave is not going to run.
I thought he announced
election.
He was starting.
No. I don't know that he has actually made that, but the fact that Ritchie came in and he's a protege of Dave's, I think that is maybe a clear indication that it's going to be between these two men. It is interesting. I think James Erb has the support of the people that are really into the jail alternatives task force that came forward, because he's got some really interesting ideas about how to reduce incarceration rates. Mm. And that's seen as a real need for Whatcom County at this point, because as it's been explained to me by people that really know what they're talking about, the discretion of all of these things really falls with the prosecutor. The prosecutor is number one in control of whether somebody gets home detention or whether they get paroled or whether they get a sentence reduced. So it's ground zero for reform of our criminal justice system. So it's in a very important election.
Absolutely.
And I just want to add to that and say that's been one of the missing things, you know, over the course of my lifetime in, you know, our political discussions, is the role of the local prosecutor, because all over the country, they have a tremendous amount of power of what the law means to the day-to-day life of the people in their jurisdiction. And I'm really happy that we have a candidate who isn't somebody's dog running for this seat, because this should be competitive every time.
Very quickly, I'll give a little piece of trivia to people that they may not know, which is that the prosecutor, county prosecutor, it's not a county position. It's not a county election. It is a state a position. Every state has a county prosecutor. So this is a state election.
Okay. And we will keep you updated in the weeks to come. Before we move to back to what Pastor Weasley is here for on Cascadia News Now tonight, I did want to ask you, I know you're relatively new to the county, but in general, if there are qualities or issues that you would look for in a candidate.
So for me, the big kind of red flag issue for Whatcom County is about housing. I don't think there's anything, like, we're going to keep growing like crazy. And I think it's up to the folk who live here to decide, are we going to grow in a way that's accessible for everybody and sustainable? Or are we going to grow in a way where only rich white retirees can afford to live here? Don't get me wrong. I love rich white retirees. They pay my salary in a pretty literal way. And I want to live in a community that's more than just those folks. So if legislators have an eye towards what does a diversity of housing look like, what does a community look like that can sustain a wider variety of income levels, then that's a legislator I'm excited about.
Wonderful. And you are, the great segue for me, working in an issue for youth who do not have housing currently. So tell us about the ground floor.
Yeah, thank you. So First Congregational Church of Bellingham is really delighted to be partnering with Northwest Youth Services. I'm sure y'all know Northwest Youth Services. They do great outreach work, housing work, case management work for young people experiencing homelessness here in Bellingham and Skagit County as well. And they've been doing that for years. They do a lot of great work in their daytime service space over on State Street. So young people can come in, get connected to housing resources, get some food, take a little nap, do some studying. But all of those services are in a space about the size of this studio, which for those of you at home, it's like two picnic tables pushed together. So they do incredible work in this teeny tiny space. Meanwhile, over at First Congregational, we've got a big, lovely sanctuary, and under that is a bunch of unfinished basement space. And it's always been our dream ever since we raised that sanctuary 15 years ago to have that be space used by the community. So here's this really awesome nonprofit that's doing incredible work in a small space, and here's this big empty space at First Congregational. And what we're doing now is raising money and doing the work to make that not just unfinished basement space, bare concrete and walls, but a really vibrant, accessible space for these young people. So we're really excited to do that. We're going to be breaking ground for the first phase sometime in the next month or two to dig for a ramp outside so it's an accessible entrance. And then late summer, early fall, I'll be doing the internal renovations to make that program space available. And we're just super excited about
and
that.
And how many people do you expect you'll serve?
That's a great question. So right now, the street outreach team, which staffs the daytime service space on State Street, tends to see between 15 and 30 young people over the course of a day. I expect that, you know, the first few weeks will be slow as young people get used to the new location and find their way there. But I expect to see at least that many. And I'm sure, I've been volunteering there to get ready for this, I'm sure there are times when a young person walks by, sees that the lobby is just full to the brim with young people, and decides that that's not going to feel safe to them or that's too stressful for them, and so they keep walking. So I think it could really grow from there.
And how did this all come about? Because you weren't volunteering at Northwest Youth Services. Who got the idea, like, hey, there's this basement?
Yeah. So ever since, there's a beautiful story about the team that was fundraising for the sanctuary build out 15 or 20 years ago. And, you know, the contractor said, hey, if you want to put it in a basement, now's the time, because you can't really do that afterward. And they said, you know, we don't really have a vision for how to use that space. We don't have a need for that space right now, but we believe that there's going to come a day when we need that space. And at First Congregational, we believe that time has come. It's probably a little past due in a lot of ways, but we're really excited to now be fundraising and gearing up to host those young people. And so it'll be space for young people to hang out and get connected with services. It'll be a little kitchen space. It'll be showers, a quiet room to take a nap in or study. It'll be offices where Northwest Youth Services professionals can come in and meet with youth, but also professionals from other agencies can come in. So folks from the community college, or folks who come in and do HIV testing and prevention work, or folk can come in and do mental health care. All kinds of things will be able to happen.
And lockers, you said, for for people?
So there's going to be some kind of storage. I don't know exactly what that'll look like. And the beautiful thing about this is, like, we're a church. We're, like, reasonably good at doing worship services and caring for people when they're sick or dying and talking about theology and stuff like that. We don't know anything about providing services for young people experiencing homelessness. So the beauty of this partnership is Northwest Youth Services knows that really well. They've got a really compelling program model. They have great leadership. I love both the work that they're doing and the methods that they bring to that. And we're so excited to host that. So a lot of the finer points, that's on them. And we're really glad to be able to empower them and acknowledge their wisdom in that,
that sense. And I know you're not a spokesman for Northwest Youth Services, but maybe you can detail a bit, because they do more than just simply on homelessness. They act as a resource for dislocated youth in a variety of ways.
Absolutely. So they have housing resources. They're active in the schools, catching young people who might be in danger of becoming homeless. They have a great queer youth program that's a homelessness prevention program, supporting our young people as they're coming out in middle school and high school to have safe places to explore some of those conversations. They're really a wraparound service model for young people who are either experiencing homelessness or in danger of becoming homeless.
So really fast, we just have a minute and a half.
Great.
But you and I first connected in a different capacity through the Leonard Streets neighborhood.
Woo.
And I know that there was concern that people who live in houses around your church mm-hmm. might be concerned about homeless youth going back and forth.
Sure. And with any new project, it's going to change what the neighborhood looks like a little bit. There's going to be new people on the block. But what we've found so far is neighbors are really excited about it. And young people are really excited about it. We asked them, you know, how is it going to be to, like, go to a program that's in the basement of a church? Is that going to be weird? And mostly they said, we want to be someplace where people want to welcome us and celebrate us. And that's so core to the work. And to make that, and again, we talked before about just the incredible creativity and passion that young people bring to our community. To give them a space to be those resources, to give them a space to be active participants in the neighborhood is something that we're finding a lot of energy for. In the Leonard Streets, in Sunnyland, in Cornwall Park, throughout town, people are really getting on excited.
That's fantastic. Pastor Weasley, if somebody wants to learn more or get involved or support this project.
Thank you so much. Thegroundfloorbellingham.org. Or fccb.net is our church website, and you can link to it from there.
All right, FCCB, that would be Franco For, Charlie Charlie Bravo.
.net,
dot
yes.
.net. Okay, so thank you so much for being on the show, Pastor David Weasley from the First Congregational Church of Bellingham, along with my fabulous co-host Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham, and the amazing and talented Devlin Sweeney, our engineer, also the producer host of American Carnage Report, which you should hear Mondays at 9 and 5 for a local perspective on national news. And I do want to point out CascadiaNewsNow.com for issues of the past and anything else if you want to contact us. Also, speaking of basements, David, we are moving to our own basement, so stay tuned for more on that.
Things clearly, everything good in this town happens in the basement.
Happens in the basement. So stay tuned for news about Camry and our own basement to come. Things might get a little hairy in the next couple weeks, but we will keep you informed. You have been listening to Cascadia News Now on KAVZ 102.5 in Deming Van Zandt, KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, and KMRE.org.